Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and this has been day number two in Jacksonville, Florida, for the International Brotherhood of Magicians annual convention, and a lot of activities were going on here today. We featured the Big Three event, which means that the registrants are broken up into groups of three, and each day they will attend one of three different things. One is going to be the close-up, which includes Michael Dardant, Paul Cummins, Dan Garrett, Chad Long, Suzanne, and Boris Wild. The second group will actually go to the two-man show to see David and Lehman. Then Dave Cox is the one rounding out for the third group. And then that will be again going on each day. So there is a red, blue, and green group. And so whatever color you are, you get the idea. Each day you go to see one of those things, kind of a round robin, big three thing. And then the evening show featured the shenanigans with Eric Buss and his group. And so that was a lot of fun as well. And of course, we finished up this afternoon with the second day, of Sage contests. And so more great competitors in that. Tomorrow we'll feature the close-up contest. So we have some great chats with some folks over here today, and so without more of me talking, I'll let you hear from them here on The Magic Word. Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com, and I have with me a couple of the people who are going to be performing on the Saturday night show, all the way from Canada, Ted and Marion Outerbridge. Hello, hello.
Hello, thanks for having us.
Hello, good to be here.
I'm glad you guys are here, and so this really is your premiere for the U.S., I guess, in performing for conventions?
Last year we were at the Abbott's convention.
Well, so, okay, I guess that counts,
that,
of course.
Yes. Other than that, yeah.
No, what am I thinking? Which one we first
this
got?
This is the big one.
Yeah,
yeah, okay.
But this is the big one for us.
We're excited. Mm-hmm. We are very excited.
And you had a truckload of illusions and everything that you're kind
yes,
of driving
and
down,
we found the last trucking spot last night here at the hotel to park, so we're good.
That's great. And you're going to be closing the Saturday night show then, of course, with the big illusion show and everything then, too. And you've been touring around Canada from one side to the other. Tell me a little bit about what that's like.
Well, for some reason, we ended up touring in the Yukon in February. And
great
now,
timing.
Now
very
it's
cool.
July and we're in Florida, so I'm not
very
sure
warm.
Who lined up the tour, but well, actually, no, that was me.
Yeah, okay.
I'm to blame. But yes, we have definitely been doing some driving this year, and the show is, it's broken in. It's ready. We're ready to.
Where do you perform? I mean, in Canada, do they have different venues than what we have here? I mean, are there nightclubs, or are they just okay?
It's all performing art centers that we perform in, from like 500 seaters all the way up to 1,200 seaters.
Okay.
So and we tour usually only one-nighters. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we get lucky and we do school shows and two evening performances, so then we're there for a couple of days. But most of the time, it's a 14-hour day for us.
Is it just you guys, or is it a variety and you have others you're working with?
We have a team that works with us. We have two or three guys on the road. We have an illusion technician, and we have our lighting.
I don't mean necessarily the guys who are working with you like that. I mean, like, in other words, that, well, you have a juggler, we have a comedian.
No, it's a
90-minute
show. It's a 90-minute show.
With just you guys.
Outerbridge Clockwork Mysteries, it's our show.
Okay.
Our 90-minute show. Here we're doing 30 minutes.
And in booking this, do you have an agent that books these shows for you, or do you do most of this yourself?
We do the marketing promotion of the show, so I'm selling the show to theater presenters, and when they are ready to buy the show, I turn them over to our business agent, Cameron. So Cameron negotiates the contract. And so I'm the good guy. I'm almost the good guy.
He's the one who negotiates the prices.
I sell the show, he negotiates the fee.
That's good.
And
relationship.
He is always able to charge more than I would be able to charge because that's what he does.
Right. That's always good. I was talking with a fellow some years ago who was doing a lot of stage, or rather, school shows.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had someone who would go in with him also, and they would talk to the principal of the school about the school show or whatever. And then he would, after he basically had said yes, and they said, how much is it going to be? He said, she'll talk about that, and then he would leave the room. And so then she would negotiate. And then if they said, well, it's going to be a certain price, he said, well, I'm going to have to go out and talk to him. You know, he'd be out in the lobby or whatever, but at least it's kind of a strategy.
Exactly.
Right, exactly.
Right. So it's always helpful if you have someone else who's doing it for you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, we find, well, we're more comfortable that way, and
at
the end of the day, we make more money that way.
Yeah. I think people do too.
It's easier for a presenter to say, you know, well, Ted and Marion aren't worth that amount, and then our business agent can say, well, yes, they are, because the cost of production is this and that, and So everyone seems to be more comfortable this way.
Yeah, I think that'd work out fine. Now, do you go back to some of the same theaters year after year?
We are usually rotating within 2 or 3 years to all the theaters. They
seem
to like us.
The same show, different show?
We always add 10 minutes of new material, approximately
every season.
Every season.
So you swap out 10 minutes. You don't add 10 minutes. You just
Exactly.
Otherwise, you have a four-hour show.
Exactly. No, that's what I meant to say.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
And how do you go about getting new material?
That's actually part of my lecture. I discussed that.
Which we preview, people will be able to hear this coming Saturday, okay?
New material doesn't come from a magic store catalog. It usually comes from our experiences, our day-to-day lives, music, images, internet. You know, we come up with a concept, and then we sort of incorporate the appropriate illusions into that concept.
Mm-hmm. We usually brainstorm while driving across the countryside because we are not flying. Exactly. We're not flying. We're driving wherever we go.
Sure.
So we sometimes sit there for 10 hours brainstorming, and the time goes by fast.
We put in a piece we call the Magic Alley into the show. So to start off, Marion and I, the concept was two magicians meet in an alley, and they're kind of dueling. Mm-hmm. So Marion and I hung out in alleyways, met a lot of interesting people, and we looked for inspiration. And we ended up with a routine which starts off with a zombie ball, except the zombie ball is a barricade light, like a flashing light like you would see, you know, covering a pothole or something.
Oh, okay, sure.
So it's a flashing barricade light floating in the air. Marion performs the zombie. And then I end up appearing in a cardboard box, and Marion gets pulled through a one-inch hole into a wooden packing crate. Oh, there's a vanishing bottle in there that comes from a street vagrant. So
these were things that were inspired by your travels, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah. Just your discussions.
That's what we see, and we remember stuff, and then we put it all into choreography, find the right music for it.
So do you reverse engineer that? In other words, the creativity process, do you have the ideas and say, well, how can we do this? Or do you have the trick and say, I saw something like this, or you're putting a person through a hole or whatever?
Well, it depends. I mean, sometimes we start with the illusion, and then we discuss how to put our own spin on it, but more often we take a concept and then the magic comes in afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, our honeymoon, we're our honeymoon, Argentina, tango, romantic encounter, man woman, and then that led to a levitation.
Okay.
And a décolleté chair vanish,
which vanish we combined at the end.
Combined into one base. So, practice.
Now, most people, I would imagine, have these occasions in which everything seems to come together, and it's like, oh, it makes perfect sense from start to end, and other times it may take months or years for you to kind of grind away at it.
Yes, like some of our illusions, like it takes 3-4 years. It's not that it's a bad illusion, it's just like we still haven't found the perfect concept, so we keep fixing it up and keep making it better and stronger. And so some of our pieces that have been in the show for many years have been developed throughout the time so much and changed a lot, which we find very helpful and very exciting too.
And then finding the right music also. Do you use commercial music that people are already hearing on the radio, or do you have music that is specially written for you?
No, we do work with... we often end up with movie soundtracks.
Mm-hmm.
Not always, but it is music that's, we buy on a CD, and then we use... in Canada, it's called SoCan. I forget the name in the United States, but...
The royalties are paid.
Royalties are paid to the composer, and
that's actually a good idea. I think to have something that people can relate to. In other words, you kind of heard that, so this way that they can. There are certain songs that I hear that I've heard on the radio, or I've heard on movies, but then whenever I see David Copperfield do it, and then it sets in my mind that whenever I hear it again, it reminds me of that experience and that fun show that I saw.
It's helpful that way too.
Right.
But the music is a huge part, really important, finding the right music. Marion's very good at finding the right music.
Yeah, sometimes I just hear a song and I'm going like, this is perfect.
Right.
Like, we had an illusion in our show. It used to be a party piece, and it was a television. I was absorbed by television, which was, the illusion itself was a lady in a puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
But this television now, everybody has a flat screen, and it's so massive, so basically Ted could produce I don't know how many girls out of it.
Yeah.
So we decided to change that television to a time machine.
Perfect.
So now we have a time machine in the show, but the music from the television before wouldn't fit to it
right.
completely. And all of a sudden, I heard the song, and I was like, and I heard another song, and I said, those two songs combined would be perfect for the mm-hmm. Time Machine. And that's how we found the Time Machine. We cut it, and it became the Time Machine now.
Right. Well, and the whole thing, again, is the Clockwork Mysteries that you've got and been compared with Doctor Who, I'm sure.
Right.
We've heard that before.
Heard that
yeah,
before.
We have an obsession with time, traveling. We have a few time machines in the show. We predict the time that the audience will choose. We predict the contents of a time capsule.
Right.
So pretty well everything ties into the time theme in
right.
the show. Yeah.
So when you're looking for different ideas, do you naturally gravitate towards those kinds of things that have to do with time? In other words, that I don't know, if you're sitting in a restaurant and you see a clock or you start to think about something that way, I mean, in other words, are you more attuned to finding something that has to do with time or clockwork, or is it just anything that comes to mind that you would add? When you're looking at those 10 minutes,
yeah, I mean, right now, sure, we look at clocks in a different way now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, hourglasses,
so. Yeah.
Any timekeeping device.
Sure.
Someone mentioned a metronome
mm-hmm.
keeping time. And so, you know, that's sort of in our our thoughts right now. What can you do with a metronome?
Mm-hmm.
So,
do you collect timepieces by chance?
We actually do.
Wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, old
alarm
clocks,
box,
particular
old
alarm clocks.
Hourglasses.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So
so in your travels, whatever you find, you pick up things.
We look in antique store windows, and if
yes.
we spot a really cool clock, you know, we're in there, definitely.
That's affordable.
Yeah.
Yeah, it depends what job we just did.
Yeah. Exactly, I understand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But very often it's also just like the concept of time. It's not particular that it needs to be a clock. It could be a special moment that we all, like, have at one point in our lives, or, like, the first date or something like that. It's a special time that means something to you. So it's not particular a clock. Like, the whole show is not on the clocks. It's like we are, like, going to the 60s, you know?
Okay.
Like, or like the 90s, the 80s, and the 50s, and so we're taking you on a whole ride. It's time in, as a concept, but it's not only clocks.
Yes, right. One of those things, again, you have to see the show.
That's right. That's
you have to see the show.
And you get a little taste. We're very excited to give a little taste to the IBM convention Saturday evening. We're very honored.
Yep. It's going to be great. A lot of fun. And your lecture will be on Saturday. So those people who are listening to this and you still have another day or so in order to come down to Jacksonville for the convention, you need to come down. We have day registrations that are available then also. And Ted and Marion are both going to be lecturing then on Saturday afternoon as part of the six-pack. We have six different lectures going on, and so you'll be talking about... What's it called? What's the name of the lecture?
It's about the basically a behind-the-scenes look at a touring illusion show.
Okay.
A day in the life of Ted and Marion.
And you just completed some lecture notes also that you said are available.
Oh, yes,
we have.
Really
be the premiere of those notes that you'll be...
The world premiere.
Of the notes, that's right.
The notes.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yes.
And then later that night having the show that's going to be great over the Florida Theater.
Six large illusions will be performed.
How many? Six. Wow.
Yes.
Okay. How many minutes? What are you doing, 30 minutes or
30.
40?
30.
30, okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow. It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Ted, Marion,
thank
Otterbridge.
Thank you so much.
Glad you guys are here. For the Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty out. Scott Wells for themagicwordpodcast.com, and I have with me the incoming president, that is the new president for the International Brotherhood of Magicians, Mr. Joe Turner. Hello, Joe.
Hi there, Scott. Good to see you again.
Good to see you as well. Congratulations, Mr. President. So this is going to be a fantastic year for you.
It will indeed.
Are you pretty excited? I mean, this is going to be something that most people would have this as the pinnacle of their life, of their achievement. You know, I mean, it's really something
it
special.
It is an honor to be part of the organization and to help us do what we're supposed to do, which is promote the art of magic and help magicians connect with each other, learn, grow, share, and just really hopefully impact the public perception of our art.
Right.
So
I think it's important that we have someone, as we had with Sean Farquhar, someone who is a full-time professional magician, certainly. I mean, we have a lot of great past international presidents who have done really good work. However, this has mainly been a hobbyist organization, an organization for hobbyists, which is great. And we also have a lot of full-time professional magicians. But when we have someone like you or Sean who has been and you will be the face of magic and the IBM, it's really promoting magic even better, I think, and showing how successful one could be.
Well, I think that's a great observation. We have obviously a whole list of past presidents with a variety of careers.
Exactly.
And they have done and continue to do important and necessary, and they do work that we couldn't run the organization without. We couldn't have a convention. We couldn't have so I'm not downplaying any of the contributions that they make. But, yeah, it does make a difference, I think, to have a performer, a full-time performer in a leadership role. It changes the way you think about the way you market the organization. I think it you know, those of us who work in the field and have to do our own promotion and publicity, and we bring that sort of entrepreneurial thought to the way the organization is led, which maybe hasn't been the way it's been in the past. Our organization has been and continues to be mostly people who don't do magic for a living.
That's
and
right.
So we're not trying to change it into a, you know,
professional
you have to full-time professional organization.
Right.
But, I mean, I think there's some elements that come from the experience of being a full-time performer that can add some excitement and maybe help us add some sizzle to the idea and help us attract more people who may be interested in magic even as a hobby or as a part-time vocation or avocation or even full-time. So, yeah, I'm very excited about that. I've made out a list of some things that I hope that we're going to work on during the coming year, and you'll find out more about those in the President's page in Linking Ring.
Right, as you'll be posting those each month in the Linking Ring magazine. Then also, you were on television to help promote the convention here then as well. Were you not only trying to promote the attendance for the evening public shows, but also encourage people to enjoy magic and to get involved with the IBM, or what was the, how'd you do that?
Yes, this morning we did a spot for a local station, and it was very tight time frame, and it was really mostly about promoting the convention and trying to promote public sales of our tickets for the shows here at the Florida Theater. Yesterday I did a radio spot, which was a little bit longer, and in that one I was able to talk about the organization and our goals and how, you know, we are an association, a group for magicians to come be a part of and grow and share and develop. So, yeah, we always, whenever we're in a city having our convention, we always try, as you know, to connect with the local media the best way that we can and get out the word about who we are, why we're here, and what we do.
Right. I was talking with Garrett Thomas about having young magicians who are inspired to do magic, and whenever they perhaps see television or see some magic, then the first thing a parent will do is to give them a magic kit. But it is, it's kind of like, as he said, going to an Eric Clapton concert, or rather hearing him and saying, okay, here's a guitar.
Right.
You know, you need to really go and have more experiences to see if that's the direction that a child would want to go.
Well, yes, I think that's true. And obviously, so many of us started with magic kits when we were 5 or 6 or 8 years old. One of the goals for my presidency is to not ignore that demographic, but I want us to put more emphasis on the collegiate interest and really make a real thrust toward creating either on-campus magic affiliates of the IBM or helping to foster the interest of people in that 20-something, early 20s, late teens. And for the simple reason that when I became an adult and had a paycheck and discretionary income that I could spend things, and the things that I chose to spend money on were the things that I was interested in when I was 20, not the things that I was interested in when I was 9.
Huh, good point.
And so I'm really hoping that with the help of, you know, Sean Farquhar made such amazing progress for the organization, and these IBM jams have been especially successful. We'll continue doing those. I have some hope that we can maybe include some sites on there that would be close to universities. I do have a goal that we try to pilot some kind of collegiate membership class, and the details of those things have to be worked out. But that is something that is close to my heart as a direction for us to go as an organization. I think it will only benefit us to do that. And
That's a great idea, and I think that goes hand in glove. I was talking with Dave Bowers, who's the new incoming president for the SAM, when I was at FISM last week, and he was saying that one of his goals is to work with the scouting organization in order to help involve them more. My point being is that if the SAM is going to be working with the younger people of that age, and then we are working with those who are in their late teens, early 20s, in the collegiate age, that the two of those, I think, will help ensure our future, certainly. I was working with Ben Jackson in Houston a while back. He was the organizer of the Brotherhood of Aggie Magicians, the BAM. Yeah, the Aggies in Texas A&M. And Scott Hollingsworth and Trixie Bond and myself and several others had gone over to College Station, Texas, in order to give lectures to their group. And they had a good size, 20, 30, 40 people involved with this organization. And so I think that if other schools can replicate something like that and get other students involved, it's a great hobby and something also that the students could probably make some side income working restaurants or whatever else, too. There are a lot of reasons why they should organize.
Sure, I agree completely. I know that in my travels when I have been either performing or speaking or teaching on college campuses here or there, I have always run into people mm-hmm. who have this interest. And whether it's, you know, one or two or three of them, but they haven't had a reason or a venue to connect with each other in that environment. So I have some goals along those lines and some strategies and tactics for how I'd like to approach it. And so you'll be hearing more about that in the coming year. And frankly, for those of us who are already involved in the organization, what I wrote in the first column was, I want us to ask ourselves this question every time someone sees me perform, regardless of whether they've seen a Vegas show or a magic on television or a magician at a party or a school or a library or a corporate event, regardless of their previous experiences, good or bad with magic, when they see me perform, have I elevated or diminished their perception of the art? And that is not always a pleasant question to ask yourself because it's not always...
You may not like the answer.
Yeah, you may not like the answer, but there's some honesty and I think there's some clarity that comes with asking yourself that on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. The same thing should be said when we have a visitor at our rings. Mm-hmm. When someone comes in who has never been to a magic club or maybe they've been to a magic club and had a bad experience sometime in their past... Mm-hmm. Has their attendance at our ring meeting made them think more highly of magic or think badly of magic? And so I know that those are dangerous waters maybe to swim in, but I think it will serve us well to ask ourselves those questions.
I think it's important to be honest, certainly, but you also want to be encouraging. I recall whenever I had joined a magic club in Tulsa, and I hadn't been, but this was like my third meeting or something. I was doing a SpongeBob routine, and I felt like that I did it poorly. However, when I read the report in the Linking Ring magazine, the guy was glowing about how great it was, and it's like I was the best performer. I thought, who did he see? And I didn't know how that I really felt, whether that I was flattered or that they were just dishonest. You know, so I mean, I continued,
well,
obviously.
You know, I think that there's nothing that. It's not mutually exclusive to be both encouraging and realistic about what we see, because we want to help each other elevate what we do.
Yeah.
Part of the original reason that the International Brotherhood of Magicians was founded was to facilitate sharing and growth and improvement in the way that we perform our art.
But you could be encouraged to go to follow the wrong direction. In other words, that there have been some acts, let's say FISM, that went on and perhaps shouldn't have been there because they were not on the same level as of talent as...
Well, a lot of those kinds of things are subjective.
It's art.
It's art, so I certainly wouldn't say... on that subject, I want to be careful because I think it's important to respect people's hard work and their feelings and all of those kinds of things. But yeah, I think that it will help everyone if we maybe sometimes take a step back and publicly praise and then in a place where it's a little more private and discreetly offer suggestions and help, but also restrain ourselves from offering suggestions in areas that we really don't have the credentials to do so.
Yeah.
I have no business telling someone anything about doves, for example. Right? I can help someone maybe with some scripting issues or certain types of, you know, card work that I have some skills in.
Of course.
But and so we have to limit and we have to choose. It's like I'm not the go-to resource for every possible question in magic. Mm-hmm. And maybe some of us feel like we are sometimes. So we just take a step back and realize, you know, if we want to improve, then that starts with improving the kind of feedback we give.
Right. I want to follow up on something that you had alluded to earlier. You quickly skimmed over the Magic Jam. For those people who are not familiar with what the Magic Jam is, would you please explain?
Yeah, the IBM Jam is an initiative that our current international president, Sean Farquhar, started during his term, and that we will continue during mine to whatever degree we're able to, mm-hmm. to make those things happen. It is a one day, basically a full afternoon, free magic convention, basically a compressed magic convention. It's free for IBM members, and it is provided by the IBM to a collection of rings who decide among themselves, I think you need at least two or three, to decide we're going to host a jam mm-hmm. in our area. And they contact the IBM through ibmjam.com, and we work out, the IBM finds performers who are able to get there, and we provide two or three or more performers who will come in, they'll lecture, and they'll perform.
Usually they're regional guys.
Usually regional guys in the area, and or women, of course. Mm-hmm. And you go in, and you have a lecture for a while, and then you have a jam where everyone who attends shares their magic with each other. So mm-hmm. you have, like at a convention, you would do late at night, but you just do it in between the lectures. Then you'll stop, and up comes another performer, and they do a lecture, another jam, another lecture, another jam, and then those three performers do a short parlor show, cabaret-type show to close, and they bring their lecture materials, and yes, they're allowed to sell their materials because they have traveled there at their own expense mm-hmm. to help provide this benefit to IBM members. So right. if you buy their lecture notes or their DVDs or products, that's great, and that helps to reward them for doing it.
And if you don't belong to the IBM, you can join there.
You join in advance because you're going to have to register in advance. Your name is going to go on a list so that you can be checked off.
And you can only attend if you're an IBM member?
It is an IBM member-only benefit, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Nice benefit.
It is a great benefit. Yeah. It was an outstanding idea, a big success this year, and I expect it to continue.
And Sean was doing that internationally, not just across the U.S.
Correct. He did them in, I think it was in Asia and maybe in Europe, and the first one in the United States was down in
Florida.
In Orlando, yep. outside Orlando. Then he did them in St. Louis, Atlanta, and Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Great. And so you're hoping to carry on that and do that with your travels.
Well, we all know that nobody travels like Sean Farquhar, yeah. so I can't commit to being all over the world in the way that he did.
Yeah.
But we're gonna continue this program.
Good.
Yes.
Good. Well, thank you very much, and I wish you continued success into your new year, and we'll talk somewhere down the road. I'm sure I'll see you at a convention or two, and we'll catch up and see how your year's going here.
Always a pleasure.
Oh, my pleasure, too. Thank you very much. I was Joe Turner, the incoming international president for the International Brotherhood of Magicians for the Magic Word Podcast. This is Scotty out. Hello, Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we're into the second day of the IBM convention in Jacksonville, and I just finished seeing David and Lehman performing their two-man show. Well, I got to count them. Two-man show. I'm used to saying it's a one-man show. So I got David here. Hello, David.
Hello.
And Lehman.
Hello.
And glad to have you guys here. This is your first convention for the IBM.
That's right.
You haven't been doing a lot of conventions at all. Is that right?
We did one in Gatlinburg.
The Winter Carnival?
Pigeon Forge.
Yeah.
Okay. We were there in, I think, March for
this year.
Winter Carnival.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was it. That was the only other convention that we've done, so this is our second one.
Have you been doing other kinds of shows? I mean, you haven't been doing things for magicians, obviously. Aside from America's Got Talent, magicians starting to
right.
see you then. What were you doing before all of breakout in the magic
America's
world?
Got Talent? We were doing basically
Magic Castle was...
Magic Castle was mainly what it was. When we were putting on our own fringe shows, the Hollywood Fringe Festival, so we produced three different shows over the last 3 years, mm-hmm. Completely different, brand new shows each year, mm-hmm. Where we would sell tickets, market, rent the theater, do the whole thing for
really?
A full month.
Four-wallet thing.
Four-wallet mm-hmm. For all of June and some of July for since 2012. So 2012, 13, 14, we did that. And that's really actually where we developed quite a bit of material.
What's the Fringe Festival like there? I've not been to the one in Edinburgh, but I understand the one in Scotland is quite different because there are thousands, tens of thousands of people who show up, and there are thousands of opportunities for you to go and see this show or that.
Right.
And they have different theaters. In fact, I've heard one person actually was performing in a car. So they only had like three tickets they could sell. You know, there's
right. But, $200 ticket.
Exactly. But you have to promote your own show and everything. So
Now, the Edinburgh model is actually the same model that the Hollywood Fringe uses.
That's what I was asking.
Which is everything, you do everything yourself.
Okay.
And
you just find a venue, whatever you can.
You find a venue, and I mean, it's really just, it's like a bootstrap kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The Hollywood Fringe actually is pretty, it's grown a lot, and it's, I mean, it's nowhere near Edinburgh in terms of size or
importance or any of that stuff.
But it actually is, it's a good fringe, you know. And some magicians, usually there's a couple of magicians each year who do it.
Yeah, Simon Cornell has done it the past 4 years, I think.
I didn't think he did. Yeah, he did it last 2 years, this year and last year, and then
he did it before that. But,
he was, he did a couple of years before.
Did he have a theater as well? Or
Okay. Same sort of thing. You rent it out and, you know, you hire somebody to do the lights and sound. Yeah. And
Did you do the same thing? Would you guys have a theater, or did you have like a just a tent? Or
no, we rent out a little theater, a little black box theater, and and then you do the show. You got to be, you rent the theater for 90 minutes, and you have to be in and out, everything set up, take down, audience in, audience out, do the show,
get ready for the next one
in 90 minutes.
Because somebody else coming in behind you,
right?
Gotcha.
2 years ago, we did this spirit cabinet in it, which was hard enough to set up.
Yeah,
the spirit cabinet thing, and then also the show right before us was about torture, and so they did like waterboarding, like
on
dumping
stage.
Buckets of water on stage.
Oh,
so there was always like a giant fan and people mopping while we're trying to set up this spirit.
It was a big
thing.
Theater that one was.
It was seats.
Yeah, it was huge for a Fringe Festival.
Right.
It was a big theater. So yeah, so
do they hold this every year? Or is this something that's the Fringe Festival?
Yeah, I think the Fringe is, I think it's
for
on
spring?
Its sixth year, I think.
That sounds right.
We started
getting bigger every year too.
Yeah, we started on its third.
Mm-hmm.
And so, or no, I guess maybe it was after. Yeah, anyway.
Well, how long have you guys been together as a team?
6 years?
6 years.
Okay.
Yeah, 5.5 years or 6 years, yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been performing together as a duo specifically. We were at the Magic Castle, and Jack Goldfinger, the entertainment director, saw us performing. We became friends with him when he started his job, or his assignment, as he likes to call it, the entertainment director.
Yeah.
And we became friends with him. I didn't know who he was, really. And one day he's like, you know, I got a date for you guys, but you have to do the show together.
Because when we started, it was just David would do a trick, then I would do a trick. We didn't really do any stuff at that. We did one terrible trick with a paper bag that was like a really, really bad Kodak.
Okay.
That was so bad that people thought it was real.
Supposed to be
right, but it
funny.
Was supposed to be just a joke, but people come up after,
oh,
was that real or not real?
Oh, okay.
Right.
We were spelling out the name of the thing, like if it was lipstick, I'd go, listen, individually, please.
But people, people really did.
And then we started working with John Armstrong, and John Armstrong basically said, you guys,
Cut all that crap.
Like, it's you're not doing a magic act, you're doing a parody act.
Right.
Yeah.
We sort of still are doing a parody act.
Yeah. We stray from, as soon as we work with John, he like rings us back in, but other than that, we'll.
So has he been like a mentor to you in a way, or has just been a consultant or giving you some suggestions?
We hired John as a consultant for our first Fringe show.
Our second Fringe show. Our third?
One of the shows.
Second and third. We worked with him twice, and he sort of ended up taking on a role as a director.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were like, oh, you're the director, I guess. And then the next year, he's like, I want to produce the show and direct it, which was cool because, you know, he came back. It wasn't like a one-and-done kind of thing.
Yeah.
And
he was invested in it.
He was actually invested in it, and we did that, and it was successful again. And So now we're working with John on Magic Live. We're doing a show.
We're going to be there. Talk about it.
Okay, well...
Right? You're not...
Well, yeah.
We can sit at where we're performing there.
Can we?
Yeah.
Well,
I thought they like to keep it super secret.
Well,
no, Stan said that we could.
Okay
then.
But we just don't say...
Well, I've only got 12 listeners.
Sued for breach of contract right now.
I'll be talking to you there in Vegas also.
Just edit this here, yeah. John. Right? It's going to make it really choppy.
So he has already said that he's going to be having Steve Forte and a couple of other guys. So he's kind of tipped a few people who are going to be there. But he's probably pretty much sold out already anyhow. I mean, it's going to be a great convention. You've guys been to that before, haven't you, Magic Live?
I went last year.
Yeah, last time.
Last time, yeah, 2 years ago, yeah. Right? Yeah. Because they helped John do some videos, so he got me a ticket for it.
It's a great convention.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Like it's, it's different being in Vegas than
it is.
Jacksonville. It adds like a whole different feel to the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, all the magicians that live there. Just
that's cool because a lot of people who live there are not necessarily attendees. They just kind of show up and hang out, which
is
kind of cool, because they're working during the day. And I see whomever, Matt King or Jeff McBride or somebody's working in the evening and they really can't come, but they kind of be in the lobby saying, hey, what's going on?
It's cool. It's, hanging out with celebrities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's,
Celebrities of magic.
Yeah. Celebrities of magic, that's right. So we got like 15 people who are... That's right. So as far as magic, that it seems like obviously that you broke out with America's Got Talent, and that had to be quite an experience for you guys as far as like how far that you went, like in the top six or something, or how far did you advance?
We were in the top 12, and then it got voted down to six, so there was no actual ranking.
Yeah.
Within that, so we were just...
Yeah, because you don't get any money until you get the top, isn't that right?
Their
contracts or whatever.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So we like to think we were seventh.
Yeah, we were seventh. Okay. You can put that on the,
on
the books. But yeah, that America's Got Talent, like really, it kicked off our, like a real sort of actual career in terms of being able to do other stuff and being able to, be like, hey, you guys want to do the convention, or hey, and we start doing
Yeah, when I talked with, Dittleman, Eric was saying that after that he was booked for, the next couple of years with stuff all over the world, people. So I assume that people were kind of clamoring after you. Your phone started ringing a little bit?
Yep. Yeah, it was the best thing. I mean, that was the best thing that we could have done. That was by far the smartest thing that we've ever done in terms of career moves.
Are you doing things, with a college circuit, or what mainly is your...
We've done some college shows,
it's mostly corporate stuff.
Okay.
Right.
College, it's too competitive and the prices are too low for a duo act.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point.
Not that we wouldn't do it. We would do it, but it's just not.
A lot of people are getting into that, it seems like. And so it seems like there's a rush from time to time. Everybody sees it's going to be trade shows or it's going to be cruise ships or whatever it is. And everybody seems to be rushing things. That's where the money is. And before long, the money starts going down because you have supply and demand.
Right. Thing, right. Like the best thing is to find out where everybody's going and then attack the opposite market.
Right. Yeah, so run away.
What's the opposite of colleges?
elementary school.
Elementary school. There we go. Nursery school.
Some school shows,
And so you've been doing still some corporate things, mainly around the country. Have you traveled around the world?
Around the country, out of the country, in the country, out of the country. Yeah. Yeah. We actually come to Florida. We've come to Florida quite a few times.
Orlando
this year.
And...
We haven't been to Orlando yet, but
we're cruise stuff out of Miami
Fort Lauderdale. We've been up to Jacksonville,
Amelia Island.
Amelia's nice.
Amelia's over here.
It's really nice.
Yeah, it is.
It's
on the east coast, yeah.
Yeah.
There's Ponte Vedra. We were just here, which is pretty close to... But, we do stuff back east, north, Boston, that kind of area.
But you live in L.A.?
But we both live in L.A., yeah.
Okay. No corporate stuff in L.A. We've done one corporate thing in L.A., that mattress thing.
Really? We did that. That was good.
Is that just because of the competition or that they're not interested in magic so much, or what's the deal?
We just don't get booked. We don't get booked for it. I don't know. I like to assume there's not any work there, and it makes me feel less bad.
Right. So do you have an agent, or do you do it yourself?
We have an agent. We have a booking manager. We work with some... these things just kind of... They come in. There's referrals.
I know.
It's kind of weird. I don't know. We don't really market ourselves, actually, very much. And somehow it works out for us.
I think, with these corporate things, there's a few big... production companies that produce these corporate shows.
Right.
So as soon as you're on their radar,
they'll use you again.
Fished around all the different companies.
Yeah.
So
well, you're a known quantity. That's why I always like once you perform for a group, they're going to say we're going to have you then perform with us for our other clients because we recognize when you're fun to work with and we know you. And again, you're a known quantity.
Right. That's why it's so important to be nice to
isn't it
all the people backstage.
Always.
You run into them all over the country. They're like, oh, we worked with you, and you're like, oh yeah, that's crazy that worked with you 6 months ago.
Don't piss off the sound guy or the guy running cable.
You never piss off anybody, right?
It's always best, I think, if you don't remember the person's name, say, hey, remember me? He said, yeah, Steve, right? He said, no, it's Samuel. Well, you're close. Had an S in there or something, you know, or had a vowel that was correct.
Right.
But I think it makes them feel more important also, at least if you're making an attempt and trying to remember. A lot of times, of course, we have facial recognition. It's like, I recognize that face, but darn, what was the name?
Right, know? Right.
It's kind of frustrating. And so from here, where are you going to be going? As far as, I mean, aside from the next convention you're going to be going to, other kinds of things for the next year or so?
Corporate shows, some television stuff we're working on right now. Our big thing is to do television so that we can...
You mean like Ellen, or you mean like a talk show, or are you talking about
special? I mean, there's things... We can't really talk about exactly what we're doing, but sort of a little bit of what you would think. Kind of like special stuff,
sure.
Maybe, but also like advertising and things like that.
Okay.
But the television stuff takes so long to... The development period takes such a long time in the production, so that it's kind of like, well, that's what we're working on.
Right.
When it comes out. Who knows exactly when it will come out.
Yeah.
If it comes out, right.
I know how
it's
that
all
goes.
About. It's all about getting paid, though. If you get paid, then you're like, whatever, you know. If it comes out, if it doesn't come
money,
out. Like,
if the money comes in. That's
right. Right.
Yeah, I understand. Okay, well, thank you guys very much for your time. And the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. And so let me ask each of you then what your magic word is. It wouldn't have to be a word. It could be your philosophy of life. What is it that you live by? It could be a phrase.
I would say feel free to fail.
I like that. Yeah.
That's what I would say.
Oh, that is nice. Yeah, we've based our career on failure.
Yeah, and you learn from that, I'm assuming.
Way more than doing a good show.
Exactly.
You can learn anything from a good show.
Nothing from a good show.
You got that euphoric high, which is very, very nice.
Right.
But you don't analyze good shows. Why would you?
Right.
And get analyze terrible shows because you don't want to have those.
Right. I like it when people are coming up and say, oh, it was a great show, it was really good. Well, thank you. And you kind of forget those. But when somebody says, you know, that the lighting was bad or that one thing that you could have done something else and they kind of tweak it, your ears perk up and you listen to that. So, and again, you by failing, you know what works and doesn't. And sometimes if it fails, that doesn't mean it's bad. It's just, it could be the audience. You know, after a couple of times, you got to say, okay, I'm going to drop it. But you got to give it a try.
Right, yeah, try it a couple of times.
Yeah.
I mean, we've tried things once and dropped them.
Yeah. I think you know right away. It's like it just really sucks.
A price investment versus how many times you're going to try something. Yeah, you spend a lot of money, you'll try it four or five times.
We make sure it works, right. But if we don't spend a lot of money on it, then it's like, throw it away.
Yeah.
But the failing thing is that's like our whole philosophy, I guess, is like, try it, and who cares if it's bad or if it looks stupid or... Mm-hmm. It's better to try it and fail than to not do it all.
Well, I like the interaction that you guys have together. You know, it kind of reminds me of Christian and Catalina Painter. I don't know if you know the two of them who are a mentalist to routine.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a two-person mind reading thing, and they finish each other's sentences. And I was going to say Jeff and Tessa Evison's. In a way, they kind of talk over each other, it seems like, which obfuscates their two-person mind reading thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I, again, like the interaction that you guys have together. I just think that's... different.
Thank you.
Dynamic that you got.
Yeah,
you
we're know. Still developing it, you know. It's a work in progress constantly. Mm-hmm. We don't really know what the heck we are. A lot of times people are like, you should be more different, like, from each other. And then, I don't know, it's like you get a different note, and sometimes the notes contradict you. So we just can... We can be a lot better, I think, at this point, if we actually...
Yeah. If we didn't follow every single note we get, right, and keep ping-ponging back and forth.
Back and forth, yeah. And Lehman, your word. Magic word. You had all this time to think about
magic
it.
Word, I know. I was going to go with failure like David did. I know the only time we've ever done, like, we did a trick with a card and can, and we have to say magic words, and we say magic words, magic words, magic words.
What's important, though? What's your philosophy of life? What makes you wake up in the morning and think, I'm going to make this a better day because of?
Nothing. I got depression. I wake up every morning and go, can I go back to sleep?
That's a good message to send.
That's right. Yeah,
to send everybody there.
Bullets are too expensive. That's what keeps me going.
That'll have to be bleeped out.
I like making people laugh.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
And magic just is the way to get there.
Mm-hmm. Magic is inherently funny. I think it's a reaction.
Comedy, and there's the surprise element that people laugh at.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Fair enough. That's good.
Anything.
Yeah, laughter. Very good. Thank you guys very much. I appreciate your time over here as well. And for the Magic Word Podcast, that was David Lehman. Scotty out.
Scott Wells for themagicwordpodcast.com, and I have with me here on day number two at the IBM convention in Jacksonville, Florida, Mr. Lion Flood. Hey there, Lion. How is it going?
It's going great. Thank you, Scott.
How did you enjoy the contest? You were in the stage contest yesterday.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. I absolutely enjoyed it. I tried out a new routine, mm-hmm. new ideas, and got great feedback from everyone on it.
Good. Good. You did, as I recall, a medalism kind of routine.
Yes.
And that's really kind of a hard thing to do in a stage contest because you have to establish your personality. You only have 10 minutes, and then you have to get the effect over. So you have some challenges to overcome.
Absolutely. And one of the ways I really wanted to do it was because whenever I talk to magicians about it at conventions, what do you think about minimalism? Well, if it's fast-paced and such, then we think it... So they hate it, pretty much. They don't want to see it. So I was like, oh, I need to add comedy. I need to add some mystery, something different. And I think I really got that across to everyone. So my main purpose was, if I do well, if I win the contest, great. But my main purpose was to show my personality, show my myself, so other people would look back and say, wow, we liked it.
You know, that's the main thing, I think, Lion, about mentalism in particular, whereas a lot of magic tricks are basically something that you can plug and play. You can literally, some people buy it and put it in their show tonight kind of a thing. Whereas mentalism, it's like juggling. It takes some time to actually get it down and do it right and be able to sell what's happening because they have to understand what's going on and trust you. And so you have to develop that trust and that bond with the audience for that relationship.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the ways that I really work to try to do this, and for some who may hear this, they won't understand it necessarily unless they saw it, but one of the ways I tried to establish that was by having the volunteer pretty much do everything from the start, from even the moment when they selected all of the cards themselves.
Yeah.
They wrote down all of the information themselves, and then I started to divine and get everything from that versus me coming out and handing them items that could have been particularly set up from me from the beginning. So at that point, the audience had no other option but to trust me,
right?
Unless they felt maybe the person was in on it, but they knew that they weren't.
So. Right, right. And I think it's important that you do show that fairness of the volunteers. They're not going to be pre-showed or anything, you know, like that then, too. And in trying to do a contest for a mentalism show, I just came from FISM, and I don't know, there must have been six or eight mentalists, more than I have seen typically at a show. And for the first year, they actually gave away a first prize award, which went to a two-person mind reading team, went to
Tommy Tin
and Emily. Right, exactly. And the point is, obviously, it was the same thing over and over, but it was entertaining because there were different items, and you're thinking, how'd they get that, or will they get the next one, or whatever. Whereas that a lot of times, like what you're doing in the context of a 10-minute contest, you only have time really to present one thing, as opposed to, let's say, manipulators who are doing a bunch of tricks, or other kinds of close-up guys who are doing the half dozen things in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So,
and I try, and exactly to your point, which you were speaking of, they were doing, because I love their act, and just really quick point on that, Tommy Tan and all of us, we were at Jeff McBride's home, and I presented my idea to them to get some feedback.
Oh, yeah, good.
And they were stomped by it. They were
fantastic.
Like, you know, all of them gave me some help, and lots of people gave me guidance on this routine. And I tried to do that same principle, which you spoke of, about different items, but I only had cards and so forth to use it with, but I used it with an influence power, then a prediction power, and then a last, a probability power. So it would still... three different spectrums, even with one item. So it didn't keep people, so they knew, okay, well, there's going to be one thing, the second thing, and then the third thing. So they weren't thinking, okay, well, is this going to be just 10 minutes of the same thing? They were expecting something different. Okay, so well, he may have got us with the influence or didn't get us, but okay, let me see if he could get me with the prediction thing.
Yeah.
Okay, he got me with that one. All right, now, what about this probability? What is that?
Yeah. You know,
so it kind of kept them on the edge of the seat, even if the mentalism part of it was boring or not interesting to them. They may have wanted to know at least what was coming next.
One of the things about mentalists also is you have to be clear as to what your quote power is, whether you're a clairvoyant, whether you're a telepath, or just are these things happening around me, and I just happen to point out these cool things that wherever I go. And so that's one of the things in a longer presentation, I think, where you have an evening show that you can actually
try to create that image, and people will know who you are. So it's important, I think, that you have a clear identity of what you're doing.
Yes, it's like you said, it's a very tough thing because you can keep people there or you can just lose people.
Oh, easily.
With manipulators, with odd card people, billiard balls, whatever, the music is even loud or you know, just fun, so it can keep people there. Most times when you're doing mentalism, the music is a Mozart or something.
Very slow. Talk,
right.
Yeah, you go to sleep. It's like...
you have to kind of do something different.
Yeah.
And I try to do a lot of that with my voice fluctuations when I...
It's important. The thing you got, really. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like Tim Conover used to kind of dance on the balls of his feet. It's kind of like he was always excited. And it's like he was very impish or like an elf or something. And it was... Yeah, you have to create that excitement.
Exactly. And even to a little small idea that I was throwing to someone, said, okay, well, why don't you, once you get the card and, you know, you present the card from each other, take it and throw it into the audience.
Yeah.
You know, because then now the audience is like, whoa, what just happened, you know?
Yes.
So even something just as small as that. And I'm also showing them that I'm not concerned about the cards. Mm-hmm. So they're not some card that's fancy and lots of money or something. It's just a regular playing card.
Right.
And what I'm doing is just pure just skill at this point. Nothing is involved. But the volunteer, myself, and the items that we're using.
Mm-hmm. Now, you competed in the contest before. It seems like I recall, didn't you do a ring routine, I think, in the past?
Yes. I've competed a lot, and then I stopped competing for a long time because I got very serious about my professional career. And a side note, which I recently opened up my own show in Las Vegas.
Fabulous.
Yes, so I have a little 40-seat theater in Las Vegas.
What's it called? Where is it? Go ahead and plug it.
Yes. It's called Out of My Mind. It's at 1110 Fremont Street. Mm-hmm. It's twice a month, every Saturday, two Saturdays out of the month. Mm-hmm. It's doing pretty well right now. But I just love it because it's a little intimate parlor.
Seats about how many?
40.
Okay.
Yeah, 40 seats. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just loving, been hard work getting that. And then I decided to work at this routine because this is something that I am working towards for the next FISM. Mm-hmm. So, but I needed that year's process of coming, letting some Magi see it, getting that input from them, restructuring, you know. So that's a goal of mine that I'd like to take to there. And mentalism is actually a new form that I've started to just delve into. I did it within my shows, but I never considered myself just a mentalist.
Yeah.
Because I do so many other things.
Yeah. Well, why that? I mean, that there are so many other things, and you were very good at doing stage and everything. Did you see a mentalist or inspired by somebody?
No, I didn't necessarily in particular, but two people who have I loved watching the whole time is Christian and Catalina. I love their style, their humor. And I have spoken through the years.
Banter back and forth.
And to me, that I love that fanciness. And I'm too old to get up on stage with the illusions and fit in the box and stuff.
I
can't do that. And the billiard balls and all that, that's great, but it's my dexterity, I just can't. So I was like, what can I do that's simple and I can still have fun with me? And I'm like, okay, well, I can do this. And, you know, and I kind of like Banachek. I love coming out and establishing and letting everyone know, hey, I'm not a mind reader. I'm not a... But what I am going to do is read body language, so they understand what I'm doing is skillful, not just some mysterious mind power. So it makes them also at the point relax.
Right.
Okay, now I just want to figure it out, you know, instead of being combative.
Yeah, otherwise it's a puzzle. When you're trying to make them figure out, you're just like, I'm trying to fool you.
But yes.
No, I think it's important that you invite the audience to kind of join you on the journey.
Yes. And I've learned that too. Big thing, and I've gotten so much better and more feedback from people by establishing that at the very beginning.
If somebody was going to be getting involved in mentalism, what would you recommend to someone?
The foreground and to go to, and everyone would probably recommend this, is 13 steps to mentalism. You know, you got to start from your roots and your establishing where your foundation, which you're building your home on. That's what I would recommend to go from that. Go to Mindvention. It's a great convention if anyone's specifically for mentalists who you get together and
great ideas.
Yes, and these are things you would never think of. Mm-hmm. You know, like one of the things I focused on in my contest was all about me being a someone who influenced. So I would demonstrate like, from the moment I shook your hand and I placed my hand on your shoulder, all of that, none of that is true.
Yeah,
but
it's believable, right, if you put it in the right context.
Right, because now people have heard about that. And I say, well, what I'm doing tonight is NLP, neuro-linguistic programming.
Yeah.
So now they're thinking, well, certain things I say at certain points are making you do certain things I want you to do later.
Mm-hmm.
But it's believable to the audience.
Yeah.
So now they're just like, okay, maybe he did say something that I didn't catch. You know, subliminal messages. They've heard these things throughout their lives. So now they're more, like, susceptible to understanding that.
Right.
Okay, yeah, he might be doing that then.
Uh-huh.
Even though none of it I'm doing.
But it's all in context and what you implant in their minds.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so that way it's the later memory. Of course, that's part of the thing about mentalism, in which that you do certain things, but then whenever you recap, you summarize using different words. So you said, now remember that you shuffle this deck. Well, no, you didn't really.
Right.
And you may have cut it, but you didn't shuffle it.
Yes.
You know, it's the
right. Remember that I had my card out before you had yours out, but I really didn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
but it's the memory you implant.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and another thing is that within that context of the mentalism and having that, it's like the one-on-one. So it's just you and the person that you have up on stage, or the two, you know, couple of guests that you have up there. But it's not. It's also you and the other 200 people in the audience that you have to still bring on stage with you. They have to feel like
break that fourth wall.
Yeah, they have to feel like I'm up stage. I'm on it. I saw that also. I felt him choose that one card, you know. So otherwise, you know, because when you are, at least in my opinion, when you're doing billy balls or canes or anything else, it's like I'm just on stage. I'm the skillful one. I'm showing what
I'm cool
I can do.
Not.
Right. But when you're doing mentalism, it's like, no, they have to feel like they're
involved. Something that happens in their mind, not necessarily visually.
Right.
You know,
yes.
I've said this before on the podcast, where I have had some shows for a client and several times for a repeat client, and then they have said to me that, or asked another time, and I was busy, and so they said, can you recommend someone? So I had Banachek do it. And so what happens is they might call Banachek another time, and they'll say, well, why did you, you know, why not call me? So, well, he does something a little bit different. Yeah, we want to have you, and we're going to continue to use you, but we'd like to use Banachek also, because these guys are understand that what you're doing is magic and it's fun, but he seems to be reaching in their mind and telling them how they're thinking, not what they're thinking, but how they're thinking. And these guys who are on the board of directors, you know, use their minds all the time, and what you're doing is a lot of fun, and it's funny and engaging, and it's not... it's entertaining and mysterious. However, what he's doing is a different kind of mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And so... it's on a different level that mentalism hits people than what magic does.
Yeah, there's a little separation. And, you know, it dates all the way back until even sometimes when kings and queens are back into those days, where people, kind of just like you said, it hits them, you know, into a different way, where they would think that witches or someone were real because they were not doing a magic trick, but they were affecting someone's life. So in a way, mentalism can almost be seen like that you're going into my mind, and wait a second, I'm someone who's shut off and no one can get into my mind, but yet still you're making them feel so. It makes their wall come down, like almost like a psychiatrist in
a
way.
Wow,
you know. It's so funny. And I initially was funny because I was, you know, coming up with names for my shows, and I was talking to people, and one of my first names was I had for my show was called Therapy Session.
I like
and it
that.
Said, come in, sit down, Lion's about to come in and do something with my, whatever it said. And then eventually some people said no, because some people could correlate that name to
a negative connotation.
Right.
Okay.
And so I was like, we'll get to fun. And that's what. So, but I like Therapy Session because it was like, you're coming in and we're just going to let it all out and have fun. And when you leave, you're going to feel, you know. So I said, okay, we'll scrap that name. And so forth. So, but yeah, there's so many different avenues you could take with that. And
the name of your show again is the
Out of My Mind.
Out of My Mind.
Yeah.
And if they want to get tickets, they can get
Classy Kid with 2 D's, CLASSYKIDD.com.
Okay.
ClassyKid.com. And then another thing, really quick on that note, is my sponsors is called Win-Win Entertainment. They are a kids group in which they donate back. So 30% of all my proceeds go back to charity.
Wow.
To help out home needy kid, inner city kids, kids, food, everything back there. And there's some heavy hitters that are on there. Matt King, Jeff Civilico, you know, these are big time gentlemen and ladies across the strip, Las Vegas, who are a part of the board. So we go to children's hospitals. Perform
nice.
At some of the local area military bases. You know, we do a lot of things for the charity and for the kids, police boards, and just a lot of things there. But 30% of all the proceeds go towards back for them to use for whatever they want. So it's a great, you know, cause and thing to when people come out to help.
Yeah, so every time I see your show, some of the money is going to a good cause as well.
Absolutely.
That's great. So. Well, as we wrap up over here, the name of my podcast, as you know, is called The Magic Word. So I always like to ask my guests about what your philosophy of life is. What do you believe in? What is your magic word or phrase?
My magic word or phrase is just, I would say, why you live, be alive.
Wow, never heard that one. That is really good. I understand what that means.
Because we just... we live day to day. It's like a machine. We wake up, go to bed, but we forget to just be alive. We forget to enjoy the food, what it feels like to taste, you know, to oh, wow, that tastes really good. Instead of just eating it, just, you know.
That's the closest anyone has come to my philosophy, which is, what is life if you can't live it?
Yeah.
And in the same kind of a thing, of which that we do live, but if you don't enjoy every moment and you live life as much as you can to the fullest, and bring people along for the ride with you, so you're not using other people. This is something that everybody enjoys the experience and the journey along with you.
Yeah.
You know, that, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, I thank you very much.
Thank you.
For themagicpodcast.com, that was Lion Flood. This is Scotty out. Okay, there's still more to say. This is part two with Lion Flood. Okay, tell me this again. You were clinically dead twice?
Yes, I was clinically dead two times. I had to be resuscitated, shocked, brought back. One time is because I was in the Marine Corps, as I was shot in my head, and I have still have fragments of the bullets because they said it was too close to nerves to operate and so forth. And then the second time is during the surgery. One nurse gave me morphine but didn't notate it, and then an oncoming nurse gave me more, so it overdosed me.
Oh my.
And which they had to come back in to pump my heart. So that's one reason why I have my philosophy in life is I've been there, and now, you know, it's, you know, people say I want to cherish every moment. I do. I wake up and it's like, hey, thank you.
Yes.
I'm back. So
praise the Lord.
Yeah. And so it's just one of those things where, you know, I don't know. It's one of touching moments where I just happy all the time. You know, of course I do have my moments. I'm down and depressed, but I'm happy. So, and I try to express that on stage too.
Yeah.
A lot whenever I perform, I've never really made an act for a competition.
Mm-hmm.
I've always just performed the act that I perform for my audiences, and I figured people are just going to like me or they don't.
Right.
So
just let the chips fall.
Yeah. And I just, one thing here is I say, well, maybe the judges, maybe the audience will see a different act out of the 20 some odd contestants and just say that is unique and different than the other 18 people pulling cards from behind their hands.
Right.
So maybe that just might get me through to the final. Might not win, but it'll get me through to the final.
That's finals, right. So. Enough of a unique factor.
Yeah, so,
okay,
but
great.
That's why I love life, because I experience...
near death.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes life all the more precious. Wow. Awesome. Thanks for that little epilogue. There we begin with Lion Flood. Scotty out. Well, there was a little bit of variety for you, this podcast, and I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I enjoy getting to speak with some of these wonderful gentlemen. And I appreciate you listening also to each episode of The Magic Word. And without you, well, I would just be talking among friends, and none of this would be recorded. But hopefully you've enjoyed the archives. You can always go back and listen again in case it was something that you missed, or I would suggest that you might consider telling your friends about this as well and spreading the word. In fact, I would appreciate not only listening, but if you can help me financially by just pledging your support by donating through PayPal. You can send a one-time donation of any amount to scottwellsmagic@gmail.com through PayPal. Or if you go to patreon.com, you can also become an ongoing and continuing supporter by pledging some amount, any that you want, on an ongoing basis. And each month that you can adjust that, or it can deduct a certain amount of whatever that you set for that. If you go to Patreon, that's P as in Peter, patreon.com/themagicword. You can watch a video and learn more about how that you can help support the Magic Word and my efforts here. Well, thank you guys very much. And again, I hope that you have enjoyed this podcast from day two from Jacksonville, Florida. And join me again tomorrow when I will present day three from the International Brotherhood of Magicians. For the Magic Word podcast, this is Scotty out.